Thank you. The marshal may call court to order.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Ross, Judge Bjorkman, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes, Jr. presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Thursday, June 8th, 2023. We have two cases on our calendar for today. Both are set for oral argument via Zoom. This is the first of them, A22-1706, Helpful versus Meadowcroft. And please forgive me if I mispronounce either one of the names. You will each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments, 15 for appellant, and then 15 by respondent, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant if you so choose. All of the rules of decorum apply, with the exception, of course, that you don't have to worry about standing. We will be recording this. No other recordings are allowed. You will have access to this recording within probably a day or two after if you want to listen or re-listen to the recording. And with that, counsel for appellant, if you are ready, please state your name for the record, party you're representing, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, opposing counsel, and may it please the court. My name is Michelle Olson, and I represent the appellant Jodine Meadowcroft in this matter. There are several issues that we have asked the court to address regarding the district court and the finding that Ms. Meadowcroft was unjustly enriched by respondent. The main issues that we are asking to address would lead to an abuse of discretion finding by this court, and we are asking for a reversal and a remand to the lower court, finding that the elements were not met and that unjust enrichment cannot be found in this matter. The reasons that we are asking for this are based on several properties and elements within each property not being met under the unjust enrichment claim. First, to be very clear, unjust enrichment is a claim of equity. So if there is another type of claim within the law, unjust enrichment is not an appropriate remedy. Specifically here, we are at related to what we call the Waseca property. Both parties were joint owners of that property, in which a different action besides unjust enrichment should have been used. A partition action would have been more appropriate by Minnesota law. However, due to the behavior of the respondent, he was removed from the home through an order for protection and seems to be using the fact that he was not allowed to reside in that property as his means for unjust enrichment. This is not an appropriate remedy for him, and as a matter of law, should not have been found, as he had a more appropriate remedy before him, which is a partition action. Now,
would the partition action still be available if we were to reverse?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, I believe a partition action may have been filed subsequent to these proceedings. So
when
he
you
had
say,
that remedy.
I know it may not be in the record, but when you say may have been, I mean, are you saying it was or wasn't?
I believe it was, Your Honor. I'm not the trial attorney for this matter. I'm just the appellate attorney. But my understanding is, yes, there is a partition action that I believe is not being addressed at this moment because we have this appeal. However, that remedy, no matter what, would be available to respondent in this matter, as he is a joint owner. They were not married at the time, so this isn't a divorce proceeding. So he would be entitled to recoup whatever remedy under that type of action by state law.
Let me ask you this. I mean, is it possible to read the court's findings and order as doing something other than granting relief based on unjust enrichment with respect to the Waseca home?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The claim that was made and the finding that the court made was under unjust enrichment. To find any other finding would be an abuse of discretion by the district court, because it failed to meet or it failed to explain any other type of element. And that's the issue we have here, is the elements aren't really addressed by the district court. There was amended findings that were requested and a motion and some findings were discussed. But at this point, because we have already asked the district court to amend their its findings, the appropriate remedy now in appeal would be just a straight reversal because the evidence is not sufficient to meet these claims. Under the unjust enrichment claim, there are three elements that have to be met.
Before you get to that argument, I see that you do challenge the decision based upon those three elements. But unless I missed it, the argument that you made beginning your presentation today orally, that there was some other legal basis to protect the interests of your client, something other than an equitable claim. I'm wondering if I missed that in your brief, or if it's somewhere. Where do you make that argument?
I do, Your Honor. There it is a little confusing because there's multiple properties, and there's multiple situations where unjust enrichment was enacted. There is the Norcross property, which is a built on a cabin. Then there is the Waseca property, which the parties had not during their marriage. I believe when we discussed the remedy, Your Honor, it would be found on page 9 of our principal brief.
I just read over it. I must have just missed it. I don't want you to waste time defending what should be clear in black and white and that I overlooked. So please go ahead with the rest of your argument.
No, I appreciate that. I just wanted to cite where it was in the brief for review.
Ms. Olson, I do have one additional question with respect to the Waseca property and the argument that I understand you're making right now that there was another adequate remedy at law in lieu of unjust enrichment. Was this issue raised before the district court at all?
I believe it was, Your Honor. However, the court denied that the relief made. I believe it was under a summary judgment, under my understanding of the record that had happened, and then it was denied outright that the claim could still be the remedy still could be requested by the Waseca or under the Waseca property. Okay, that was my understanding of the record.
Because I don't recall seeing it anywhere in the district court's order, any discussion of whether or not there was another legal remedy, i.e. partition, available with respect to the Waseca home.
And that's the issue, Your Honor, is we believe that as a matter of law, the district court failed to recognize that there was an alternative remedy. I know it was also discussed at trial that this remedy was not appropriate. And I believe it was also discussed in the amended findings motion that, again, this remedy is not appropriate specifically for the Waseca property, as that is a remedy of equity and there were a partition action. And I believe that makes sense, as my understanding is now there is a new partition action that is being filed regarding the Waseca property. So at this point, it's almost as if there's been a double dipping, as respondent is requesting through a partition action related to the Waseca property, but also has this unjust enrichment claim. And the reason why we don't allow that is so we don't have these issues regarding it. And specifically, I believe since at least from my review of the law, since 1971, we've said that you can't use a remedy of equity specifically related to these unjust enrichment claims when there is an adequate remedy, legal remedy.
And I do see that even though you didn't have a heading for that argument, you did include a statement about the partition action. And I gather your argument would be the same regardless of, on that question, the legal issue, regardless of whether partition action has actually been filed outside the record.
Absolutely, Your Honor. No matter what, if you have another legal remedy, that is what you need to assert first. If you don't have any other legal remedy, that's the point of having these remedies in equity like unjust enrichment. But there is another remedy for Waseca.
I'd like you to turn to what seems to be the heart of the matter when it comes to the merits of the unjust enrichment claim, which is that there needs to be something of a moral or legal concern to make it actually unjust. And your argument, I gather, the claim requires more than just an individual receiving property without objecting to it.
Yes, Your Honor. That is what we have found in the case law. It isn't just a simple matter of receiving money. If that were the case, we would be able to do unjust enrichment quite often, and the courts would be flooded with claims like this. Instead, there has to be some type of inducement or some type of immoral behavior on behalf of the person who is being sued for unjust enrichment to find that they were unjustly enriched. That's the point of the unjust part of it.
It is an equitable doctrine, and you would agree that based upon the district court's findings, it would certainly seem unfair for your client to receive the funds. Let's assume we agree with the district court, and we see no error in the finding, or there's reason to support the district court's finding that these weren't gifts. Assuming that these are not gifts, you would agree that at least feels a bit unfair for your client to receive the benefit.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor. This isn't, it is a remedy of equity, but it is not whether or not my client received something and maybe that was unfair. It's whether or not my client did something affirmative.
No, I understand that. I understand that argument, but stepping aside from it, if it were assuming that, I mean, the district court seems to have refashioned its legal standard in its amended findings. At first, its first findings did not include this element that you're talking about now, the unfairness or I'm sorry, the unjust part, the immoral or unlawful, and then changed its analysis in the second findings. But you would agree that the district court's first order seems to be appropriate. Again, without that second that element that you say was missing.
Again, I would respectfully disagree. The findings that were made by the district court, the finding of the immoral type of behavior isn't appropriate as a matter of law. Really what seems to be happening is a burden shifting between the district court saying, well, Ms. Meadowcroft must show that these were gifts. She has the burden to prove that she wasn't enriched inappropriately, when it actually is the respondent's obligation to show that she not just received these benefits, but she did so in an inappropriate way or
Didn't we have testimony from the respondent that we agreed, and I think findings, that the parties agreed to make all of these improvements to the Norcross property, and respondent testified that your client told him treat the property like it is your own. Doesn't that reach the kind of affirmative act requirement that you say must be met to provide equitable relief?
I would disagree, because while that statement may or may not have been made under the testimony, the issue is respondent was aware that was not his property. The parties had been through a divorce. She had been awarded the property. He was well aware that this had been her property prior to putting any type of building or any type of improvement on the land. And then when he wanted something more affirmative, such as putting it in the will or putting his name on the property, there was an affirmative no. He had notice.
I'm not sure that addresses the point that Judge Bjorkman's making, which is, One thing that, although the district court didn't spend time explaining it, there was testimony, as Judge Bjorkman points out, that there was this treat the property like it's your own. Why isn't that an inducement, the kind of inducement to make the investments that you say is necessary, the unconscionable part, although the district court didn't tie it together, why isn't that enough?
Because then there was a subsequent discussion of making the property his own by putting him in a will or putting respondent
why is that? I mean, just because she doesn't include him in the will, how does that negate the prior inducement?
I believe it would negate if there was a finding of inducement through that one statement, that then being told, no, I'm not putting you on the property, would put him on notice to not continue further, because she's not going to allow him to have any part of the property. He was not going to become a co-owner of this property.
Well, let's assume he's not going to become the co-owner. She's told, hey, go ahead and do this. I'm putting words in the right. I'm sure this wasn't the actual testimony. I think the import of it is this property, you can treat it just like it's yours, presumably not just for a couple of years until our next breakup, but in perpetuity, this is going to be yours to use. Even if she doesn't put it into his will, even if he doesn't become fee owner, he loses all the benefit of all of his contribution. No?
That can happen, but that doesn't mean that Ms. Meadowcroft was inducing him solely through that statement to then make those improvements or continue those improvements upon it. What that would be is inferring something that isn't fully there within the record, because there is further evidence in the record that he was aware that that wasn't going to happen, that he was not going to be allowed to maintain the property. And the fact that they had had multiple breakups and had multiple situations of divorces would also be evidence that this isn't a situation where Ms. Meadowcroft was saying, come back and fix this for me, and now I'm going to let you leave.
Oh, so you think it was there's something in the record to suggest that he should have known that this was going to end in a couple of years? And that when she says it's yours to use, it was only for that period?
I see I'm going to be out of time. May I answer your question?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. I believe that when we look at the record, we cannot look at it in a vacuum. While this one statement has been made, I don't believe that statement itself created an inducement, because through historically how this couple had worked, Ms. Meadowcroft and the respondent, they had gotten married more than once, had been divorced, then had continued to have these relationships and have issues with each other. And all of these situations culminated in that respondent was not an unaware person. He was not being tricked into doing something. He knew that he was doing this of his own free volition, and now he is upset with the situation, which is why he's asking for unjust enrichment.
Although your time has expired, with the permission of the presiding judge, may I inquire further?
Yes, you may.
So if that's so, if he's relying upon the history of the relationship, as you say, wouldn't the history of the relationship suggest that there is no permanent end to their relationship, and that he would have access? I mean, that it's true, they've ended their relationships in the past, but neither the beginning nor the end of their relationships have ever been the final moment in their saga. And so why should he assume that any breakup would be permanent?
It's not the permanency that's at issue. The knowledge that he has is that he has not been given the property. He does not have any title to it. And he knew that when she refused to allow him to have a will made or to put his name back on the property after their first divorce. It's not that the relationship could have continued or that they could enter a relationship.
Was the testimony that you can use the property at any time as if it's yours, or you can use the property at any time as if it's yours so long as we continue in our romantic relationship?
It would be the first one, Your Honor. However, the issue isn't that the property can't be continued to. The issue isn't use, that I think unjust enrichment here. It's that he put improvements on it. And because he put these improvements on it, he's saying she's being now benefited and that's unfair to me. Then the notice issue is that he knew he wouldn't have, he potentially didn't have the ability to have use. And use is not a requirement of unjust enrichment. It's what the benefit would be to her. And we cannot say that there was a benefit to her that he was not aware that he may not get to keep, or that is what makes it unfair that there was a benefit made. In fact, we make benefits to people all the time that we don't always get to keep. It doesn't mean that I can go then file an unjust enrichment claim. There has to be something more inducing into it.
Thank you. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes for your arguments, and we'll get the clock set here in just a second. And once it is set, there we go, you may begin.
Thank you. My name is Perry Berg. I am the attorney for the respondent, David Hepfel. Members of the court, counsel, may it please the court. So it's our argument, obviously, is that the appeal should be denied. The district court did not make any clear error of law here, and the district court was within its discretion did not abuse its discretion in making the decision in this case.
The district court found that what was unconscionable is she gets to keep stuff that she didn't pay for. That's not enough, is it?
I don't think it has to be unconscionable. It has to be unjust. It has to be circumstances where it would not be fair to Mr. Hepfel.
Right, but the district court's basis for it being unfair, unconscionable, unjust, the district court's analysis was just he paid for stuff, she kept the stuff. That's not enough under the standard, is it?
Well, I believe it is. You have to look at all the circumstances, and all the circumstances was that they had this significant relationship. They made these purchases of both the Waseca property and the cabin property with the intent that they would continue that relationship for a long time. In fact, there's testimony at trial that Mr. Hepfel thought he'd be retiring to that property in Waseca, and that because it was a bed and breakfast, that would provide him supplemental income
I understand all that, but I'm pretty clear. I think the law is pretty clear that it's not enough just that it feels unfair that one party gets to keep something that the other party paid for. There has to be some type of injustice, some type of immoral act, including fraud, a dishonest inducement, something to have caused the transfer. Otherwise, you would have unjust enrichment replacing breach of contract in virtually every allegedly unfair exchange of a benefit. So what, as I read the district court's analysis, the district court didn't seem to tie the unconscionable act to anything other than she gets to keep stuff that he paid for. Correct me if I'm wrong, or point me to some analysis in the district court's reasoning to contradict that.
It's similar to the other case law where somebody purchased the property on a contract for deed, and the vendee made significant improvements to the property where the seller knew they weren't going to be able to perform that contract. They just stood back, didn't do anything, let that happen, and then received the benefit of the improvements because they were able to cancel that contract. So in this case, Ms. Meadowcroft sat back, let Mr. Hepfel make all these improvements. She knew he was doing it for his benefit, although and jointly. And then when the relationship broke down, she filed an order for protection, which excluded him from the property. She then refused to allow him to regain his personal property items, which had been easy to let him come retain those. And she also refused to compensate him for all of the money that he spent on acquiring the Waseca property and that cabin property and the personal property. So that is the unjust conduct by her taking advantage of that situation. Might have been different, I think, if they'd had a 10, 20-year relationship after these purchases, but this literally happened within, I think it was 19 months after the Waseca property was purchased. And the whole time, Mr. Hepfel was making the mortgage payments, the utility payments. He was doing everything. And she took advantage of
it. Was there any evidence that she thought the relationship, that she did this knowing that the relationship was going to end?
I don't think there was actually any testimony, but that's what it appears to have happened.
Well, the district court didn't find that.
They did not. No, they just felt that under the circumstances, it was unjust for her to keep the benefit of the contributions by Mr. Hepfel.
I'm going to ask you, Mr. Berg, one of the things we asked the parties to do was to review the Supreme Court's recent decision, and I'm going to say Herlotch, but I don't know how it is, versus Rux. And while both of you mainly focused on the notion of how does one calculate damages for unjust enrichment, I mean, that case also gives us a little guidance in terms of the nature of the wrongful, immoral conduct, if you will, that would sustain an unjust enrichment remedy. And in that Herlotch case, you had someone making an assurance, making a promise, I will pay you back. We don't have anything like that here. How does the statement, treat it like it's your own, come close to the sort of inducement statement that our Supreme Court found sufficient in Herlotch?
Well, you know, in reading Herlotch, it did make the statement that she had made a promise to repay, but that didn't seem to be focused by the court very much. They didn't make that a element or a specific finding or a fact that should be relied on in future cases. But I think that is similar to the Heppel case in that Ms. Meadowcroft knew that Mr. Heppel was making these purchases believing that they would have a long-term relationship, and that did not in fact happen.
But I okay, so that's his reason, but how is that, I'm trying to see the injustice in that. You mentioned earlier, well, if this had been a relationship that lasted longer, this one only went 19 months after these contributions. Therefore, what? I don't understand the connection. Why it would not be unjust enrichment if the relationship went on for another 10 years, but somehow it's unjust enrichment because it went on for 19 months. I don't see the cause and effect relationship.
Ms. Meadowcroft knew that they purchased the Waseca property as a retirement property. She knew that they wanted to start a bed and breakfast to provide income for both her and for Mr. Heppel after he retired. That would be a source of retirement money for him. So she received the benefit of that, knowing that he wanted to keep that property into the future, would get the benefit of it in the future, and she's denying that.
What was unjust at the time that she accepted the, why was that unjust at the time that she accepted his contributions?
Well, it wasn't unjust at the time. It became unjust where she did not compensate him or return property to him after she ended the relationship. I think that's no different than when you have a contract for deed and the owner, fee owner, allows the person to make improvements to the.
Well,
to the,
that sounds like exactly what the Supreme Court has said repeatedly is not enough. It's not enough simply that one party receives the benefit by the obligations, efforts or obligations of others. You seem to be saying, well, that in fact is enough.
But it has to be unjust. The total circumstances have to make it unjust to deny
right,
Mr.
It sounds like you're saying that what is unjust is that she benefited later on by something that, you know, the parties seem to both think that he was going to receive the shared benefit. But the fact that they were both wrong about that, don't you have to show that she knew, that she anticipated the relationship was going to end, that she was somehow fraudulent in suggesting that this was, that he was going to have a continued share in the benefits? What, I don't see the injustice yet.
Well, it's factual that this relationship was on and off. They had two different divorces. You know, in her mind, she may have not believed it had been a long-term relationship, but she was going to take advantage of what Mr. Heppel was willing to purchase and contribute on her behalf for these properties.
Okay, what's the evidence of that? That's what I think that would be enough. If there was evidence presented in the district court that in her mind, she knew the relationship was going to end, she wanted him to make these contributions in anticipation of that so she could go off with a windfall. That would seem to be fraudulent. That would seem to be an unfair inducement. The district court didn't find that. I don't see any evidence. I don't see the district court even analyzing that as if that had been presented to the district court, but certainly there were no findings. Is there any evidence to support that? And if so, can you cite us?
No, I don't believe there was any testimony that she anticipated ending the relationship, you know, not until the relationship actually started to unfold and she filed the order for protection, which excluded Mr. Heppel from the property.
Well, I think the order for protection was granted. So there must have been presumably we accept that there was a basis for it. So Are you saying that was unjust and unfair for her to exercise her right to be protected from someone against whom the district court found that she needed protection?
Not at all, Your Honor. But the fact is that he did not contest it at all. So whether or not there was abuse, he just didn't contest it. But she took advantage of using that order for protection to exclude him from the house so he could not get his personal property, at least. And also, she refused to compensate him for what he did invest into that property. If I can move on to, I know counsel was arguing about the partition action for the Waseca property. The issue of the down payment that Mr. Heffel made on the Waseca property, he paid $45,045 of the down payment. At the time of trial and before trial, we argued that he should get that money back. It was never raised by the appellant that they should use the issue of a partition action as a different remedy. In fact, the parties agreed and stipulated at the time of trial that they agreed that the net equity in the property would be divided, except that we reserve the claim of and request for his down payment of $45,000 to be returned to him. So we might have the option.
Ms. Berg, I just want to clarify, because it sounds like appellant had argued that they did in fact raise the partition issue before the district court, but the district court never decided it. Are you saying that they did not raise the partition issue on the with respect to the Waseca home before the district court?
It was never raised. I didn't. That first time it was ever raised is in the appellate court briefing.
Okay, thank you.
But I do want to admit.
Well, and if I can just follow up, Mr. Berg, I asked Ms. Olson about this whole dealing with the Waseca property, setting aside the business aspect of it, that while it comes as an appeal from equitable relief, it seems like this is something other than an unjust enrichment analysis, given that the parties were joint owners, given the part that they agreed that they should equally share in the equity that they had built up in the place. Because I don't really find a finding that anything's unjust there. Do you believe we can read this as simply an equitable division of joint assets?
Well, the parties agreed to submit it to the court to determine whether or not he should get the down payment back. The judge did make a finding that it would be unjust for the appellant to receive half of that down payment. So I think it was an issue that was submitted to the court, and they allowed the court to decide it based on in the complaint, you asked for other relief. And that's what we were asking for. And both nobody raised any issue of partition action. We have to bring a partition action now in order to force the appellant to pay or sell the property, even though the court found that Mr. Heffel is entitled to the $45,000. There's no way for us to collect that without then forcing a partition action for the sale of the property.
Can you would your client be prohibited in a partition action? Let's assume there had never, that this action never occurred, and all you, your client pursued only a partition action. Is there anything that you understood in law that would foreclose your client from raising the question of his down payment in the partition action?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that would have been appropriate to raise that then. Right.
But your position is it was never raised in the partition issue was not raised in the district court.
The issue of partition was never ever raised. And as I said, I think both parties agreed to submit this to the trial court for a decision on just the down payment, because they have stipulated that any net equity after that is split equally. That's all.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We'll get the clock reset. And you may begin.
Thank you. Just to relate back to this issue of unjust, I agree that there has to, or excuse me, there has to be something more. This isn't a situation where it's just and a benefit has been incurred. That would be a very difficult remedy to deal with. And it is not actually a remedy in equity then. It is not equitable to say, well, you got a benefit, so now give it back to me. That isn't what we determine. The reason why we have unjust enrichment is that someone has done something to make somebody give this benefit, and they knew that they should not have received the benefit and that they were intending to keep it without compensating the other. That is really at the heart of an unjust enrichment claim. And here, that isn't what happened. The parties had been in multiple relationships and there was knowledge of the two of them. I think the fact that an order for protection had been made against respondent in this situation shows it was not Ms. Meadowcroft that thought the relationship was going to end, but the fact that she needed protection.
During the break, were you able to find in the record that your client had raised the partition issue in the district court? Or do you concede that the first time partition has been asserted as an alternative legal basis is on appeal?
I was looking for it. I can't cite to it specifically in a document, but my understanding was at a minimum that the motion for amended findings discussed the issue of a partition action. And my understanding is that there is a current partition action occurring that got filed this year regarding the
property. No, I understand that. I'm on the issue of whether the issue is preserved. That's my question. It may be that there's a separate partition action, but if the district court was never presented with the legal question, but your position is that it was, the district court in fact was presented with the issue. We can check it for ourselves. I don't want you to waste your time here looking further if you haven't found it yet.
I will say I believe it was preserved. I cannot cite specifically to the record. I did try to look through the voluminous documents of the case file, and I believe it was talked about at the amended findings, but I cannot say on the motion document that I was looking at that it specifically talks about the partition action, but that doesn't mean it wasn't relayed during the motion part that I can't address. So I would ask for you to look for it in the record and correct me if I am wrong. I still think, though, the issue is even if the partition action wasn't fully addressed, the partition action is still something that needs to be found. What the court had to find was that there wasn't any other remedy, because by law, if there is another remedy, you still can't find unjust enrichment if elements are met. So in this situation, I don't believe there was ever actually conceding that this is the only remedy. There's no stipulation in this record that I could ever find that both parties agreed unjust enrichment was the only claim. And there was an argument that unjust enrichment isn't appropriate here. So I still think no matter what, the district court could have found, well, I can't give you unjust enrichment because you have another remedy. And this is the appropriate.
Right, but it's not up to the district court to plumb the law and look for possible legal remedies that are available if the parties don't present it to the district court. I mean, you're not suggesting that the district court's failure to recognize partition would be enough if the issue wasn't raised in the district court, are you?
I don't believe it is an absolute requirement of the district court. However, the district court does have to find that this is the only remedy because it's a remedy of equity. And if there is a potential other remedy available that and the district court is aware of it, then I do believe as a matter of law, the court can't find for it. I would agree if both parties had actually stipulated that that was the only remedy or that was the only thing that was being sought, then they are waiving their right to partition, but I don't believe in this situation that is what had actually occurred. And again, I do believe it had been addressed. So it's a little bit of a sticky argument because I'm sitting here trying to figure out exactly how this had been addressed. I think, again, one of the biggest things we take from here is that there was no inducement. Mr. Heffel wanted to be in this relationship, wanted to buy these things, and maybe he wanted a benefit, and I'm not saying he didn't. And I see I'm out of time. May I finish?
Yes, you may conclude.
Thank you. He may have wanted that benefit, but by his own actions, he lost the benefit of use, which is really what he's suing for, is that he doesn't get to use it right now. And that is what he's upset about. That is not an inducement, and that is not something my client did affirmatively to create an unfair advantage. She was abused, and there was an order for protection put in place on her behalf. There is testimony that he continued to try to violate the order, which is discussed in this trial. Again, she is not the bad actor here. And that is what needs to be found, is that she created this immoral imbalance in which unjust enrichment would be the remedy and relief. So we are asking for you to find that the district court abused its discretion and reverse and remand to the district court. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments and your briefing. We appreciate that. We'll be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe. Thank you both.